Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently released a new report on alcohol poisoning. You may have thought that binge drinking and alcohol poisoning was an issue for young people in their teens and 20s, but the majority of deaths from alcohol poisoning were adults. Have you ever experienced it? Or do you know someone who died from alcohol poisoning? What do you think is the best way to talk about this issue in our Native nations? That's coming up right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A bold project to try to reintroduce salmon in the upper reaches of the Columbia River is being introduced by tribes. Reporter Steve Jackson has more.
While salmon runs seem to be making a gradual comeback in the Columbia River, no salmon have been able to make it past Grand Coulee or Chief Joseph Dam since 1942. A new paper from the Columbia Basin Tribes and Canadian First Nations lays out a phased approach that would first assess the viability of reintroduction. The project will be coordinated by the Upper Columbia United Tribes, or UCUT. UCUT Executive Director and Colville Tribal Member D.R. Michelle says it's a huge undertaking, but if successful, will provide many benefits.
There's a lot of tribal benefits just on where we, you know, for thousands of years, where we are, how we use the river, and our ties to it. But we're looking at this more as a regional benefit. It's going to benefit everybody who lives along the river and everybody who comes here to visit. There's a lot of opportunity in a good functioning ecosystem with fish above those facilities.
Phase one of the plan will consist of a feasibility study to determine habitat availability, suitability, and salmon potential above Grand Coulee. A 30-day public comment period on the plan will kick off the process. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
Lower Brule Sioux elders and Treaty Council members are meeting in the aftermath of an investigative report to discuss allegations of misappropriation of funds by their tribal leaders. Jim Kent visited the reservation in South Dakota and spoke with community members about the report.
The Lower Brule Treaty Office is where elders and their younger supporters gather to discuss issues impacting tribal members directly related to treaties with the federal government. But this is also where elders voice their opinions and concerns about current-day tribal issues. Tonight, that conversation centers on allegations of mismanagement by longtime tribal chairman Mike Jandrew. It's a situation Janice Bad Horse Larson says is nothing new.
I've been fighting this since the 70s. My sister and other people, we've been fighting, and I left in the 80s.
Larson returned to Lower Brule in 2000 to find nothing had changed.
I just said, well, I might as well join the fight again. Pick up from where I left off. Well, this time I was more education and all this and that.
Cheryl Estes Scott also left the reservation and was surprised when she returned in 2008 by what she refers to as tyranny. Scott says her biggest eye-opener came when she was president of the Tribal College.
I had gone to the council to present a petition of over 400 signatures to get 25 acres of land for the college. Mike made the statement himself, this is not going before council.
Cheryl Estes Scott hopes the Human Rights Watch report, which Mike Jandrew has discounted, will at least result in a change of tribal leadership. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Native leaders in education, business, health, and other areas are testifying today before the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs. The committee is focusing on Indian Country priorities for the 114th Congress. U.S. Senator John Barrasso will be leading the meeting. The Wyoming senator was elected chair of the committee this month. Barrasso is focusing on jobs, energy, natural resource development, healthcare, education, and tribal self-governance. He's the fourth ranking member in the Senate Republican leadership as chairman of the Senate Republican Policy Committee. Barrasso addressed tribal leaders last week when he gave the congressional response to the State of Indian Nations address, where he told leaders there's much work to be done and in a bipartisan way. Tune in this week for continued coverage of the priorities hearing. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Are you an experienced journalist who can lead radio producers and reporters in best practices and bring Native voices to a wide audience? Kawanak Broadcast Corporation seeks an executive producer, program manager. Full description at NativeAmericaCalling.com.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Thanks for joining us today here on Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Here on the show, we often talk about our Native communities and how they're dealing with alcohol abuse. In the past, we've discussed alcoholism and treatment many times. Today, our focus is on alcohol poisoning. And have you ever known someone who has had alcohol poisoning? Do you know the difference between drinking a lot and drinking to the point where you have it? The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, recently released a new report on alcohol poisoning. The highest rate of alcohol poisoning in the nation is Alaska. But other states with high Native populations, like New Mexico and Arizona, also showed high rates of deaths related to it. Is this an issue in your community? Join our conversation today by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And to start us off this hour from Boston, Massachusetts, I'd like to welcome Tin Namey, and he's a physician and alcohol researcher at Boston Medical Center. And Tim is a co-author of the study released by the CDC. Welcome to Native America Calling, Tim.
Thanks so much for having me, Tara.
And Tim, thank you for joining us. Let's start this way. Let's go over the basics right away. Tim, what are some of the signs of alcohol poisoning?
Well, alcohol poisoning is sort of a broad term, but the main idea of alcohol poisoning is that it follows or comes with a period of very, very intense intoxication. So it would be sort of a progression of mild intoxication, and then it becomes more severe. And as many of your listeners may be aware, that at very high blood alcohol concentrations, then people may have a depressed level of consciousness or become sort of partially conscious or unconscious and ultimately may stop breathing and die on that basis.
And Tim, do people who get alcohol poisoning always end up in the hospital?
Well, that's one of the problems. If you don't end up in the hospital and you have severe alcohol poisoning, you can die. So, in other words, of course, alcohol poisoning, as the name implies, is caused by alcohol, but prompt treatment is important. And in fact, for most people, were they recognized and identified and brought to medical attention at relatively earlier stages, then a lot of these deaths could be prevented.
And Tim, you are also a co-author on the study released by the CDC. Anything you want to share about what this information might be providing to communities, especially in Native America?
Yeah, so the main purpose of this sort of national study of alcohol poisoning was not to focus on American Indians and Alaska Natives particularly. And so the main findings of the report is that alcohol poisoning causes about over 2,000 deaths a year in the United States, or about 6 deaths per day. When we look at this in the broader context of all types of alcohol-attributable deaths, it's good to sort of contextualize this in that those 2,200 deaths a year are actually just a very small percentage of all alcohol-attributable or alcohol-caused deaths each year, of which there are close to 100,000. So these alcohol poisoning deaths maybe account for 2 or 3% of all of those deaths. But the reason why it's important is obviously it's a very because that these kinds of deaths are 100% due to alcohol, and they're sort of what we call a sentinel event in public health. In other words, it's the kind of death that has a very clear link to excessive alcohol consumption. So it's an important type of cause of death. If you think about causes of death from alcohol, we can sort of divide them into two baskets, if you will. One would be causes of death that stem from acute intoxication. So people would think of things like alcohol poisoning or car crashes, or let's say somebody who dies from an injury or so forth, or even drowns because they're heavily intoxicated or something like that. And then you have also, of course, chronic conditions like alcoholic cirrhosis would be the best known, in which the people have their disease process over a long period of time and ultimately die from it.
All right. Thanks for sharing that, Tim. And again, our phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. If you have questions about alcohol poisoning, you can give us a call, 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if you're listening to the conversation today and wondering if you or a loved one has experienced this in the past, you can call in, ask your questions. We want to hear from you, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Tim, what are some other factors that can increase the chance that someone might die if they drink too much and end up with alcohol poisoning?
So that's a great question, Tara. So as we said, first of all, it's the amount of alcohol that one has consumed and over what time period that matters most. So in other words, the higher your blood alcohol concentration, or the larger amount of your bloodstream that is accounted for by alcohol, that's the strongest risk factor for actually dying from alcohol poisoning. But then I think there's a number of other factors that are important to mention. So those could be things like people who are using other substances, other either prescription medications or illegal drugs that might cause them to be more drowsy or to have less sort of that might blunt their brain's desire to breathe. Any of those things could increase the risk of a death for somebody who is poisoned at a certain level. And then there are other and then things like that. And then just being in probably in poor general health or being more frail would increase the likelihood that one would die from poisoning. And then there are probably other important environmental factors to consider. So those might be things like concurrent hypothermia or having a low body temperature. For example, if one is very drunk and falls asleep outside, and one is either wet or it's very cold, that could increase the chance that they die of poisoning. Now, typically, when people die purely of just low body temperature, it's classified as a death from hypothermia. But many times we know that things like poisoning and low body temperature might keep the same company. So those are sort of some of the environmental circumstances. And I think something else that you mentioned, Tara, earlier on, which is the idea that people who may be drinking in this way, who are either sort of isolated either socially or geographically or in a place, whether it's in a city or on a remote road somewhere where they're not likely to be identified as being in trouble, or for whatever reason they're not brought to medical attention or prompt medical attention is not readily available, those could also increase the risk of poisoning leading to an actual death.
All right. Thanks, Tim. And you're also speaking not only from the perspective as part of this report that went out as a researcher, you are also a former physician of the Indian Health Service. So, I understand that some of the information that you're sharing today, is coming from that expertise, which, by the way, I want to remind folks, if you have any questions, you can call in 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're learning more about alcohol poisoning. What do you think about what you're hearing? Does it line up with what you've heard about it? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. And what about when it comes to binge drinking? Do you think it always leads to alcohol poisoning? We want to hear from you, Native America. Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. 2848. Let's add another voice. Joining us from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, is Summer Welcher Duke, and she is the Director of Behavioral Health at the Oklahoma City Indian Clinic, and she is Muscogee Creek. Welcome to Native America Calling, Summer.
Thank you, Tara. Thank you for having me.
And Summer, you work directly with clients who are dealing with alcohol abuse. Were you surprised by the results of the CDC study?
I was not surprised, but I was interested to see the numbers. You know, I think it's important for people to see that, you know, 2,200 people die each year from alcohol poisoning in our nation. And I think it's important for people to hear this because I think it's something that anybody who has been intoxicated or has been around people who have been intoxicated, I think this is something they can relate to. And hopefully by seeing these things in writing, seeing the numbers, seeing the symptoms, seeing the risk factors, then we can really raise some awareness. And because this is these are absolutely preventable deaths.
And Summer, we're also throwing in the word binge drinking. Give us a definition of that.
Well, drinking for a significant amount of alcohol in a short period of time, oftentimes, or drinking every single day for several days, which is often what people will do, and we see a lot of that. And you know that term alcoholic or alcohol abuse, people can construe that in so many different ways. And oftentimes, when somebody tends to be a binge drinker, then they may not necessarily recognize that or identify that as an issue. And so, when you look at these numbers in this study, it gives us the opportunity to really bring binge drinking, bring awareness about binge drinking and the dangers of that, you know, into light. That even if you don't consider yourself, so to speak, an alcoholic or somebody who has an alcohol use disorder, binge drinking can be extremely dangerous, and this study shows that.
And Summer, is there anything else you'd like to add about what is going on with your body when you are experiencing alcohol poisoning?
Yeah, you know, and I think that Tim gave an excellent review of that. But I think this is something people can relate to. And what's important is to remember, if you are in a situation with somebody who has been drinking excessively, you're very used to that, to seeing that person pass out or seeing that person vomit, or for people who are at a party where people are drinking excessively or in a situation where people are drinking excessively, vomiting and passing out tends to be, you know, fairly common. You know, we hear about that a lot. But when you hear these symptoms of alcohol poisoning and understand how severe it can be, I hope that people will pay more attention to that, that seeing somebody unconscious, knowing that they have vomited, will then go forward from there to pay attention to their breathing. Is their breathing slowing down? Are they having, 10 seconds between breaths? Looking at their body temperature, like he said, looking at their skin color. Is it blue? Is it kind of pale? Noticing if they seem to have a seizure, that can be another symptom of alcohol poisoning. So just really, I think it's important for people to know these things so that if they do encounter that situation, they don't just write it off as though, that person's just drunk. You know, we'll just let them sleep it off. And that, I think, sometimes is where some of these deaths come in, is that we don't recognize it as alcohol poisoning. We think they're just drunk and passed out, and they'll recover from it. And when you said earlier, does everybody who has alcohol poisoning end up in the hospital? I would think no. I think there are times when people have a certain level of alcohol poisoning that they do recover from and do not end up in the hospital. But if we can raise awareness and pay more attention, then those times when it is severe, get them to the hospital and prevent death.
And Summer, you mentioned, signs to spot if this is happening, or maybe you should do something. But what should you do? What should be the first step? I mean, a lot of people, you hear that they try and wake them up, or what should somebody do if they think this is going on?
I think if the person is unconscious and they're slow breathing, and you think, honestly, if there's any kind of doubt, I would get that person to a medical professional or even call 911. Oftentimes, one of the issues is that everybody in the environment has been drinking excessively, so there's nobody available to drive somebody to a hospital, or maybe there's a situation where there are other drugs involved or underage drinking, or, as a mental health professional, I could go on and on about certain situations where this occurs, but oftentimes people don't take the steps needed to get somebody to a mental health to the hospital. And so I think you know, just calling 911 if there's any question about it, or, you know, calling an ambulance. People are scared to do that, I think, because it's alcohol-related, and maybe the other people in the environment might be afraid of being in trouble or, you know. But, you know, if it can prevent a death, then I would say it's absolutely worth it. So just if there's any doubt at all, go ahead and call 911.
All right. Thanks for that, Summer. And again, phone lines are open. Are you concerned about alcohol poisoning or maybe even binge drinking in your community? What are people saying about this? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. We want to know why this issue is important to you. Again, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. You can also reach out to us on social media. We are on Twitter and Facebook. Just look up Native America Calling. And Summer, many of your clients are facing long-term alcohol abuse. When you talk to them about past experiences, do you hear stories that make you think they experienced alcohol poisoning in the past?
Yes, absolutely. And so you can take that opportunity to educate them about alcohol poisoning and the dangers of continued use, so that you know, to hopefully prevent that again. But sadly, that doesn't always curb the, you know, the use.
All right. Thanks for that, Summer. And Tim, you know, a lot of times when we hear the word binge drinking, a lot of people think of young people, although the report says, you know, a lot of the deaths caused by alcohol poisoning are middle-aged men. I do want to get your perspective. You know, when we do think about young people, teens, college students, or maybe even just folks in their 20s, you know, what do you think? The study you co-authored found something completely different. Tell us about this. What do you think?
Well, I think when I was with Centers for Disease Control, I studied binge drinking quite a bit, and I just wanted to elaborate on something Summer was discussing, and that is the idea of binge drinking, is at least the term is used in a public health context or by CDC, is to denote a level of drinking that typically leads to acute intoxication. So, and that's usually defined, if we do surveys and so forth, that for sort of men who have consumed five or more drinks in a row or in a short period of time, or women who have consumed four or more. Now, most people who binge drink will drink well in excess of those levels, but those are the definitions for sort of five or more or four or more drinks in a setting. So that's the kind of drinking amount that will typically lead to legal intoxication or blood alcohol level of greater than 0.08, which we are familiar with from driving. So that's sort of how binge drinking is defined. And then, as someone was alluding to, it can occur. So, of course, people who have severe, you know, what we used to call alcoholism or alcohol use disorder, that kind of drinking can go on over a period of many days, or it can go on over a relatively shorter period of time. And as we know, when it comes to alcohol poisoning, you get both flavors. So you get some people who are relatively, who may not drink that much a lot of the time, but they're the so-called weekend warrior, or they may even be naive drinkers, or relatively naive drinkers, like a college student or an adolescent. And then there's a big group in between who, again, may not be alcoholic or may not drink on a regular basis, but will drink to get drunk, you know, particularly on the weekends and that sort of thing. But the actual alcohol poisoning and death from it is really stemming from acute intoxication. And so, again, it can stem from a lot of those things. Well, when we study binge drinking in the population, even though most people think about sort of college students or adolescents, we find something similar, which is that about three-quarters of all the binge drinking, you know, episodes that occur nationally occur in people over the age of 25, so over the typical age at which most people would be finished college. Of course, you know, a lot of people younger than that don't go to college, but that's not really the point. So the point is that binge drinking is not something that begins and ends in high school. Once people are, you know, out of their 40s and into the 50s and 60s, you do see binge drinking start to decline as people get older and people take on other life responsibilities, you know, sometimes getting married or having kids, that may change their behavior. But to me, it wasn't too much of a surprise, but I think it's something that would be surprising to a lot of listeners, and that is the idea that this is not just a problem of, you know, kids and college students.
All right, and let's throw that out to our listeners. What do you think about what the numbers are saying, that they're saying that more middle-aged men fall into this category? What do you think? What is the reality in your community? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. We're hearing some of the factors and what leads to this, but what do you think? What are the reasons people binge drink and potentially put themselves in danger of alcohol poisoning? Again, call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. We want to know what you think. Let's go ahead and bring in Mike in Buffalo Springs, New Mexico. He is tuned in on KGLP. Mike, what do you think?
Good morning, Tara. Good subject.
Hello.
This is one of those issues a lot of us would rather sweep under the rug, per se, you know. But I myself experienced and ran into a situation where I drank too much myself back in late 70s and ended up in the ER with GI coffee grinds from too much drinking. And that was enough to scare the bejesus out of me. But I have a family history of losing 7 family members due to alcohol abuse and poisoning, whatever you want to call it, you know, but it, the main focus was just the alcohol. And it can be a devastating thing. Like, I lost a sister that exploded from the inside out from too much alcohol and prescription pills or whatever she was taking. But things like that do happen. And working as a emergency medical service technician out here on the Navajo Ridge, I've seen a lot of devastation that alcohol plays in the lives of everyone. So people just need to make wiser choices. Sometimes we don't make those choices until after something has happened.
You know, Mike, you're right. We do appreciate your call there in Buffalo Springs, New Mexico. And what do you think? Do you agree with Mike? You can call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. What about Mike's words of saying this is something we like to or that we are sweeping under the rug? Do you think more dialogue needs to happen? Do people need to talk about this? What do you think? 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And what do you think are some of the reasons why we don't talk about this? Is it uncomfortable? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. And any folks who are out there who are working in your community to better educate folks on this topic, call in too. We want to know what kind of methods are working, maybe even methods that don't work. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We have some folks on the line today who are seeing this in their field, even doing research on it. And if you have questions for them, you can call us 1-800-996-2848. And you can also call in anonymously too. If you feel more comfortable doing that and have something to say, you can call us at 1-800-996-2848. We're going to pause for a moment to tell you what is coming up tomorrow on Native America Calling. But again, our phone lines will remain open, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Home cooking from your tribal community can mean a lot when you live far from home. There's good news for you urban dwellers. More Native restaurants are on the horizon. And these special kitchens are aiming to bring you a taste of home when you're miles away. Join us for the next Native America Calling, where we'll hear more about these Native food hotspots. Oh,
Are you an experienced journalist passionate about bringing Native issues and perspectives to a wide audience? Have you demonstrated ability to lead radio producers and reporters in best practices to produce programs of the highest broadcast standards? You could be the next executive producer, manager of national programs at Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation's Albuquerque-based Annenberg National Native Voice Studios. Find the full job description and how to apply at NativeAmericaCalling.com.
Support provided by Raven Alaska, offering passenger, cargo, and same-day package delivery to over 100 communities across Alaska. Find out more at flyravn.com.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and today we're learning more about alcohol poisoning. And some of the signs of it include vomiting or passing out, and the people around you can't wake you up. Have you ever been in a situation where you were worried that someone you know was experiencing alcohol poisoning? What did you do, and were you able to get them help? Or do you have questions about what to do if you see someone who you think is suffering from alcohol poisoning? You can call us. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And a report recently released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, showed that middle-aged men were more likely to die from alcohol poisoning. And does that sound true for your community? What do you think? Can older people be at risk too? Oh, and are you worried about binge drinking among teens or those 20-somethings? Be a part of our conversation today. You can even call in anonymously again. And the number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And in the first half, you heard from Summer Welcher Duke, the Director of Behavioral Health at the Oklahoma City Indian Clinic. Also on the line with us is Tim Namey, a physician and alcohol researcher at Boston Medical Center. And Tim is also the co-author of the study released by the CDC on alcohol poisoning around the U.S. Again, phone lines are open. If you got questions, call us 1-800-996-2848. It's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go to our phone lines. We have Deborah in Albuquerque in New Mexico. She is tuned in to KUNM. Deborah, what do you think?
Good morning, Tara. I appreciate the topic. And one thing I wanted to add to the conversation is that in my work with substance issues with some Native communities, one thing that seemed to be helpful was talking about the context of alcohol use, including its introduction into New Mexico by the Spanish. And that's not something that people think about necessarily going all the way back that far. But even as I was talking about it, thinking about that idea of contact between the two cultures, or between all of these cultures, these European cultures and Native culture, that's still going on. And the Native communities and Native individuals needing to make decisions about alcohol use in that context. It just seems like it was really helpful to have, to include in the conversation, that history and the present day, you know, messages from American culture about alcohol use, and maybe, you know, and then young people making decisions and older people making decisions too that include that. But I think, so it just seemed really helpful to some of the people that I was working with to include those aspects in the conversation. So I'm including that in this conversation. Thank you so much.
All right, Deborah, thank you for your call. Summer, I want to bring you back in. What do you think about what Deborah shared?
I think that's absolutely correct. It's so important to incorporate culture and make the education and the treatment relevant to the culture. You know, we, in our nation, there's over 560 federally recognized tribes, and they speak over 150 different languages. So if you try to incorporate just one way of educating everyone and one way of treating everyone, then you're missing people, and you're going to get people who you know, are not buying into what you're saying. And it's very important to make it relevant to the population that you're speaking with. So every type of education that we do, even with starting with young people, you know, when we start educating on this topic as young as 8 years old in our community, and we always incorporate some aspect of their culture, whether it's drumming or beating or talking circles or whatever it may be, depending on who we're working with, because it needs to be relevant, and their identity needs to be a piece of that.
And Summer, it's great to hear that you're talking to young people. What kind of message do you send to an 8-year-old on this?
Well, we first start by screening them. We screen everyone who comes into our clinic, no matter what point of entry they come in, and we will ask them questions. You know, for the young people, it's questions about, have you ever ridden in a car by somebody who was using alcohol, or have you ever used alcohol to relax? Do you ever use alcohol by yourself? Of course, with younger kids, just, you know, assessing their level of knowing what, you know, what alcohol is, but in trying to see if they're seeing it, you know, in their homes. And so once you're able to kind of assess their level of understanding and how much they may be witnessing, you know, in their environments, then you can go from there. And just explaining to them, you know, here's what it may look like. And honestly, it sounds sad, but it's an absolute reality, helping them understand what it may look like if mom or dad is experiencing poisoning from alcohol or has drank too much and may be in danger, and what to do in that situation.
And what about tailoring this message to young people? What do you think? What's the best approach? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. And the study we've been talking about on alcohol poisoning came out from the CDC this month. It placed Alaska at the top of the list on alcohol poisoning deaths. Let's go now to Alaska to hear how Alaska Native communities are talking about binge drinking and alcohol poisoning. Doug Modig is one of the founders of the Rural Providers Conference. It's an annual gathering that travels around Alaska and brings together Native people who are in recovery and those who are interested in helping others achieve sobriety. And Doug is Simpson. And we want to thank him for joining us. Hello, Doug.
Good morning.
Good day to you, Doug. And any initial thoughts you want to start us off with as we're hearing this information about the CDC's report? What do you think?
Well, you know, alcohol poisoning has been an issue for as long as I can remember. And it's really nice that somebody studied the problem and affirmed what I have observed and what many people that have been actively practicing alcoholics have observed for many generations. One thing is that, you know, alcohol for sure is a poison to the human body, and that it generally follows a specific path, starting with dizziness to loss of balance to lapses in judgment. Probably because it's been around for so long, that and that it's very common that it comes with a stigma, so that people generally dismiss the danger related to alcohol because it's been there for so long. And in Alaska, at least what my observations have been, not only here but also in the lower 48, is that drinkers alcohol is only limited to a specific place or a specific time, and so that the alcohol is consumed as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and Doug, you hit on a big point here. I wonder if others are thinking the same thing. You can give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And today we are talking about the effects of alcohol poisoning, also mentioning binge drinking. The two connect, we are told. What do you think? You can call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. You're more than welcome to reach out to us on social media, too. We're on Twitter. We're also on Facebook. And you can share your questions. And you can also call in today if you'd like, anonymously, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. I want to hear more from Doug today. Doug, what are some of the reasons binge drinking and alcohol poisoning is becoming an issue in Alaska communities?
Well, you know, the lady that spoke before me, the one that I think she works in a treatment center, and she was talking about, you know, understanding the history of alcohol, how it came into our existence. I think she was making reference to the Spaniards. But generally speaking, or why that's relevant, is that alcohol was introduced as a means to exploit Native people all over North America for the furs and for the resources of the land. So that's the nature of alcohol. It actually causes you to, you know, have a lapse in judgment. And so that part is important, but it's also what's integral to that is that understanding the history, not only of alcohol, but the history of our people, is that we can learn some lessons from that. And the purpose is not to sensationalize the idea. The sensational is to begin to understand what alcohol is and then what it does. By nature, alcohol is a poison, but by culturally, in order to address alcoholism, we need to think in terms of the main feature of our culture, and what we share with other cultures is that culture is prevention, and that by sharing our history, we can prevent uses of alcohol.
And Doug, we've heard this a lot of, you know, infusing culture into, especially with our young folks, as a way of prevention. And if there's somebody who feels that that is a direct line to making sure young lives are leading a healthy path, you can call us, tell us your thoughts, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Also, if you think the same thing goes for adults, we want to hear from you too. Again, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Doug, you've been working on substance abuse issues in Alaska, Native communities for over 30 years. What are some other things that are helping make a positive difference, especially when it comes to reducing the number of deaths and health issues related to heavy drinking? Doug?
Well, let's see. Before I get too far afield here, one of the things is that one of the cultural features is an ability to connect with one another. And so thinking in terms of learning from our history and connecting with each other, we devised a way. There were several of us, actually, that were involved in the early days of what became known as the Alaska Native Sobriety Movement, and which resulted in the Rural Providers Conference. And what it is that we learn from our experience about alcohol, and then we share with each other about what our experience has been in order to help other people that are trying to help their loved ones address alcoholism. And these are regular, ordinary people. They're people that have loved ones that are affected by alcohol. There are people that come from communities in which alcohol is causing them concern. Or it is culture bearers that are worried that their culture will go away because of the use of alcohol. So we gather and we engage in processes that are decidedly Native, in order to teach each other how to address alcoholism in our state and in our communities.
All right. Thank you for that, Doug. And, you know, when we do think about bringing in this approach, I'd like to hear from folks in the audience, too. You know, what are the benefits, not only keeping folks healthy away from being one of these numbers or statistics, but what other benefits come with this type of approach? Again, call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Doug, we got folks calling in. Let's go ahead and weave them in. Let's go to Dillingham, Alaska now. We're going to bring in Dan, who is in Alaska, and he's tuned in on KDLG. Dan, what do you think?
Well, good morning. I really enjoy your show. But one thing about Alaska up here, one thing I noticed, because I've lived out in remote villages for the last, 15, 20 years up here, and I think remoteness plays quite a bit of part in, at least up here in Alaska. You know, you get out to, say you live in Dillingham, and you come up from a village, it costs quite a bit of money. You have to fly, on a plane because there's no, no roads or, so it's very expensive. So anyway, you get to Dillingham, you do your shopping, say you buy a couple of cases of beer, you fly back to the village. Well, if you only do that once or twice a month, and, you know, you get back to the village and everybody that wants to have a beer comes on over to your house, and, you know, because of, you know, there's only so much that's there, people tend to stay and, you know, drink till it's gone. And so I think the remoteness plays quite a bit of part into the binge drinking. You know, there's only so much. You might as well get it while it's here and, you know, drink it till it's gone, and then that's it. You won't see it again until the, you know, the next payday or the next time you fly to town, which, you know, isn't very often. So I think the remoteness plays quite into the binge drinking up here.
All right, Dan, thank you for sharing that perspective. Again, you can reach out to us, 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can also send us an email to comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And I'd like to go ahead and welcome another voice to the hour. We have Renee Anthony Ruzan. He's the Youth Program Manager at the Alaska Native Justice Center, and he's with us today. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you.
And Renee, you work with young people who have been convicted of consuming alcohol under the age of 21. Why should we care if young people are drinking, especially in high amounts? What do you think?
Well, my experience has been that the young people who are assigned to our program, Alaska Native particularly, I'd say about a third of the referrals come in with the high content for what they call a portable breath test, PBT. They average about a 1.5 or higher, and so it's a great concern with us.
All right. Renee, I got a caller on the line. Let's go ahead and bring in Les, who is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Les, what would you like to share?
Well, I would like to share that I'm a parent of a son who is a binge drinker, alcoholic, and I have learned through membership in Al-Anon family groups that alcoholism is one. A lot of people who are alcoholics have relatives that are alcoholics, but also learned that it's a family disease, and that for those related to the alcoholic, there's help in Al-Anon family group and Alateen, and those resources can be available through www.al-anon.alateen, which is alateen.org, or locating your local Al-Anon family group. And here in Albuquerque, we have those meetings are almost every day of the week.
All right. Thank you for your call, Les, here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Renee, when we do think about, you know, young people fitting into this spectrum, any other thoughts about strategies that work on addressing things like binge drinking in young people?
Well, when I come across a young person that blows a high portable breath test on their police report, one of the things that I really want to talk to them about is a thing called adverse childhood experience or childhood trauma. And without asking them to disclose anything to me, I explain what that is, what adverse childhood experience is. And that means anyone who's been exposed to some type of trauma between ages of 2 to 9 years old, when they're very vulnerable periods of time, then they're much more likely to self-medicate when it comes to substances. And so in Alaska, we have a very, very high rate of Alaska Native peoples that are in foster care. And so we can imagine, it's hard for me to imagine but to be, you know, ripped from your family and placed into a foster care, and in some cases being placed from foster care to foster care, can be somewhat traumatic. And if you never process with someone about what you've gone through, and then usually in your teen years, it manifests itself in heavy drinking, and because it's a way to self-medicate. So I share with the young people also about historical trauma, understanding that in Alaska, particularly, that's where the population I'm working with, many of their grandparents were placed into boarding schools and were traumatized and never got to process that experience, even though everyone that was returned back to the village at age 17 went through the same experience. No one processed it. And so it manifested itself and heavy drinking, binge drinking, and also it permeated trauma within the family, which becomes historical generational trauma. So I try to help them to understand those experiences and those causal and effect type of things. So, and it seems to have some effect on some young people that I'm working with, and that's what we're doing it for.
And Renee, you work on the justice side of things. You know, how important is it to get that message to young people, especially maybe if you're coming across them or connecting with them because they are being caught for the first time?
Yeah, it's very important because we want to try to get into the point of prevention. Actually, you know, we hear a lot about prevention, and it is good. But a young person, when they first come in contact with law enforcement or the justice system for consuming alcohol, that's an opportunity to use prevention to stop them from repeating that behavior. And if you can begin the process of, I'm not saying stop, make perfect people, but if you can begin the process of helping them to make healthy choices as a minor, then you reduce the chances that it's going to be generational or that it's going to carry over to the 20s and to the age 30s, where they'll be having a habit of being in front of the judge because of the same type of violations, which are going to be alcohol related. So we begin the process at a young age when we come in contact with them to help them to make healthier choices and to make informed choices. And I think Doug hit on a great point when he talked about cultural awareness is a strong tool to help in prevention, and that's what we use heavily too.
All right, thanks for that, Renee. I got another caller we're going to bring in. Let's go to Washburn, Wisconsin, and tuned in on WOJB, we have Denise. And Denise, do you have a question for us?
I do. I am concerned with what I see in folks who might have some physical things going on with long-term effects for alcohol usage, such as perhaps gray cheeks. And then my other concern is what happens to a person's body and what to look for if they are so addicted to alcohol. I have concerns that in their times when they are not drinking, what to look for might happen, such as I've heard possibly some seizures. Can you help me with that?
All right, Denise, thank you for your call. Let's turn that one over to Summer. Summer, go ahead.
Well, I think any time that you can notice any type of liver functioning issues, you know, if there's a change in the color of their skin, if there's any blood in urine, also, you know, withdrawal symptoms from alcohol for somebody who has been drinking for long periods of time historically can also be life-threatening. So that's something to notice, you know, if their anxiety level is high, if they tend to have shakiness whenever they have stopped drinking, if there's any seizures, if there's any hallucinations, things like that. Did I answer your question? Are there other questions you have about your specific case that we could look at?
I think that gives us a good starting off point. We are coming close to the end of the hour. And Summer, maybe if you can share some resources for folks like Denise who want more information or who might have more questions, any good resources to check out? Go ahead, Summer.
Yes, ma'am. Since this is a national show, I will give you the National Treatment Referral Routing Service. So this is a good 1-800 number for treatment or treatment questions, and that would be 1-800-662-HELP, HELP. And then there's also an online treatment locator, which is through the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, and that would be findtreatment.samhsa.gov. And another good one is healthfinder.gov. That one's going to give you kind of the health-related issues that you could kind of search for, maybe put in your specifics there.
All right. And Summer, any final comments about, you know, just taking a look at this, not only in our communities, but maybe even nationally, more things you think that we need to be considering or maybe even talking about when it comes to preventing, especially deaths that are connected to alcohol poisoning?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think just following up on what Renee was saying, because I think it's such an incredibly important point, is that we all, mental health professionals, law enforcement community, we all really need to be operating from more of a trauma-informed care standpoint, instead of asking, you know, what's wrong with someone, but what has that person been through. We know that alcohol tends to be a big coping strategy for people, and so when we can identify what's the underlying causes, what they've been through, how they're feeling about themselves as a result of what they've been through, typically when we can focus on that and when we can treat that, then we can see more results than just focusing on the alcohol use alone. And then what we talked about earlier, just really understanding how serious alcohol can be if it's used in excess, knowing the signs of alcohol poisoning, paying attention to it. If you see someone in a situation, they're passed out, just not assuming that they're just drunk and they'll sleep it off. You know, really just paying attention to them, monitoring their breathing, monitoring their body temperature, taking it very seriously, and understanding how dangerous alcohol withdrawal can be. Because I think you know, many people don't understand that alcohol withdrawal can be one of the most deadly withdrawals. They may think it's more heroin or cocaine withdrawal is the most deadly, but alcohol withdrawal is actually incredibly life-threatening. And so I think just knowing how serious it can be is incredibly important. Operating from that standpoint of trauma-informed care and being culturally sensitive whenever we're working with these people are three very important things.
All right. Thank you for that, Summer Welcher-Duke, for joining us and sharing information. Also want to give thanks to our guests and callers. We heard from Tim Namey, also Sarah Clark, actually Doug Modig and Renee Anthony Rusin. We do appreciate everybody for sharing in the hour. And again, we're inviting you to check out our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. It's fresh and you can navigate through it and see what we have planned. And you can also connect to us on social media, too. Twitter and Facebook is where you will also find us. And thanks to our crew today, our senior producer, Monica Brain, Andy Murphy, our associate producer, Stephen Emmons, our engineer, Kavi Mabahe, screened your calls today. I'm Tara Gatewood, and Sarah Gustavus produced today's show. We'll be back again tomorrow. Thanks.
Kwanek Broadcast Corporation announces the Alaska Native Art Auction taking place on February 26, 2015 in Anchorage, Alaska. This one-of-a-kind event includes artwork from the Alaska Native community. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. If you would like to contribute art, reserve a table, or become a sponsor, learn more at knba.org. Proceeds benefit National Native News Programming.
Support provided by the Tribal Telecom and Technology Conference, Weaving Pathways Across the Digital Divide, May 4th through the 7th, 2015, at the Hotel Albuquerque at Old Town. Bringing together tribes and the telecom and technology industries to pursue solutions that advance digital opportunities for American Indian and Alaska Native communities. Early registration for vendors has been extended to January 30th. Info at tribaltelecomconference.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanek Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.